welcome to the best of Drew and Mike for the weekend. And it's brought to you by our friends at Scott Kunith Real Estate. Our friend, rather. We don't care about
just him. There's no team.
Not that we don't care about anyone else at Coldwell Banker. We're manual. It's just that Scott is our guy. And you've heard about Scott before, and I got a note this week from, let's see, it's from Zach, who said that he works with Scott. He actually, this is a little out of date because he's purchased the home, but he said, I'm currently using Scott Kunith as my realtor for my first condo purchase with David Hall, procuring the mortgage. He gets a plug he doesn't deserve.
Well,
I'll give it to him because Hall's great. I know you appreciate when listeners give you feedback on advertisers, so here's my turn. Working with Scott has been amazing. Not only is he professional and knowledgeable, but fun to work with as well. Took time out of his weekend to look at places on Sunday with me. I secured financing for my condo from David Hall. And so it's been a great experience. He found his condo in Novi, I believe. And in fact,
he's going to have to get a Lincoln to drive to work.
We'll work on that.
And
so
hopefully
far.
His eyes are good, too.
I think he's used
three. I mean, actually, I hope his eyes suck. He needs to get them fixed.
He might be using Prudential now that I think about it. No, that's another.
In his new condo.
But nonetheless, it's all working out very well with Scott. And if you want to reach Realtor Scott Kunith of Coldwell Banker Weir Manual to see what your home is worth or you want help in finding your new one, call 248-797-7746. That's 248-797-7746. You can text him too. Or S. Kunith, S-K-U-N-N-A-T-H at CDWM.com.
Come on, your house sucks.
And he'll tell you. So I've had to do that before. That's actual audio of him talking to one of our listeners. And, it felt bad, but he got the message across. He had to fix the place up a little bit, just the way it goes. So, let's see. For the weekend, I know item number one is Gretna Van Fleet, who I don't want to spoil. I don't want to create a need for a spoiler alert, but she is, of course, the name that the band, Greta Van Fleet.
Yeah.
A Frankenmuthian.
I don't think she's not necessarily the influence, but she's the name.
And she's in her 80s, and it's a weird story, but nonetheless, we got to talk to Gretna Van Fleet, and she was, of course, delightful. And then I've forgotten why. Wait, oh, I know why we got on Rod's limos.
By the way, I think their new album's coming out soon. Greta Van Fleet.
Good.
The one that they've been working on for a while, the first full-length one.
They rock.
You know, they had a really healthy problem in that they were distracted from putting this album out by the fame that just swept them.
It's a great problem to have.
All of the different festivals and stuff like that.
October 19th, Anthem of the Peaceful Army.
That's cool.
And they've got sold-out dates again in town, like five straight nights. I mean, there's just a huge demand for a good young rock band. So good for these guys. But moving along to item number two, Rod's Limos. Why the hell are we talking about Rod's Limos? Well, it's because this story is so stupid. Kevin Spacey was in the news for Me Too. And his brother is a, and I quote, Rod Stewart lookalike.
And aren't there too many Rod Stewart lookalikes?
I met one over the summer.
Yeah, at Pine Knob. The guy's been out there for a million years. Or DTE.
I met one at the Woodward Cruise, and he came up, and I said, are you the Rod Stewart impersonator? And he goes, no, I'm one of several. And I was like, how many can there be? So
too
lots,
many.
I guess.
There's been one in the VIP area of DTE for decades.
Hangs out with Jack Nicholson.
That's my guy.
He might well do that. Where is Jack? I haven't seen Jack in a while.
He's not been around.
And Tom?
Tom Cruise, yeah.
Tom.
Always Tom. Good guy. But so, this is so weird that Kevin Spacey's brother is a Rod Stewart lookalike. And in fact, he had a limousine service where you could pay extra to get him, and you could pay even more to pick his outfit. Remember
that's
that?
Right. Yeah,
how silly
right.
that got?
Yeah.
And we interviewed him at length on 105.1, and when Spacey got in trouble, he just thought, well, we should get Rod's opinion. Like his name is
comment.
His name is not Rod, by the way.
Is his last name Spacey?
Yeah, illegally, I assume it is.
Sure.
That whole thing is a really weird story, but somehow we got mixed up in his life.
We should call him again because of the new Spacey story where he's actually being sued by a masseuse. Travolta style. We haven't even talked about that.
I know. It's a nasty story. I'm getting a little Me Too'd out on these lengthy stories. They all, not that they're not all equally horrible. Well, I think, Trudy, you said the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, you know what the thing about that is, too, is that If you have one sort of lurking around the back of your head, you know whoever it is going to lie about it. So, or they think you'll lie about it. Yeah. And if don't, these things just, I don't know.
It's been an onslaught, for sure.
I don't know.
And, you know, every time it happens, some people are inspired. And I mean, if good comes of it, I have nothing against it. It's just that it's just really hard to read these stories over and over and over and over.
The good that's come of it is UB40 is in the news again.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the only winners.
How many downloads are they getting in spins? And then finally, we wrap up the best of this week with Jackie the Joke Man, Jackie Martling. And this was, you know, Howard Stern's been in the news a ton. I mean, he stays in the news. It seems like the satellite show since I got back into it. I've learned the show almost inside out. And I wish there was more of Jackie because he's on the 101 channel more from the old bits from the 90s. And I thought his laugh was incredibly infectious. He's funny. And Howard ragging on Jackie was always one of the, seemed to be a lot of that back in the day.
Why did he leave?
He left over money, as he tells us that whole story, and it seems a little short-sighted.
Yeah,
but
he's doing fine.
He's a hustler. Jackie's a hard-working guy. He's a hustler, and he's always working. And he wanted to come here. I think maybe I forgot to follow up on something. Which I think
I thought Maz was putting that together.
You'll probably hear about that, and when you hear it, just realize that nothing was followed up on. So it's not that there was no interest in Jackie; it's that somebody dropped the ball. I guess the promotion department fucked up. I don't know what else to say. So
has he been at Ridley's?
Does he do his thing at Ridley's? He doesn't play out of state a lot. He plays New York and New Jersey. I just think he's really big there. Yeah, and it. I don't know. You know, I would have thought he would have been more of a national guy with the Stern Show.
Yeah.
But maybe he left the show too soon to really take... I don't know. I can't really explain that. I bet you'd draw a big crowd if he did come, as I think you'll hear me point out. Anyway, the best of is brought to you by Realtor Scott Kunith of Caldwell, Banker, Weir, Manual. To see what your home is worth and help in finding your new one, call 248-797-7746 or text 248-797-7746 or S. Kunith, S-K-U-N-N-A-T-H at cbwm.com.
I'm going to try Gretna real quick while you go through those.
Oh, yeah, please try. Gretna is her name, right?
But they changed it. They took the N out because they thought Greta Van Fleet.
It rolls off the tongue.
What?
Hello?
She hung up.
I think you need to call her back on the Hall Financial Hotline.
Yeah, I think so too. Did you originally call her on the Hall Financial Hotline?
I did not. I'll try now.
Oh, it'll work on the Hall Financial.
I mean, when you originally spoke to her for like 2 minutes, the usual what? It's crazy. Can't hang up, right?
Yeah. And I talked to her on this phone, and I just kind of gave her the whole.
Oh, that was on the Hall Financial Hotline?
Yeah.
I know it wasn't called the Hall Financial Hotline yet, but it was on that same phone number.
And I told her I'd call her back, and yesterday she didn't answer any calls. It just rang and rang, no message, and today she just fumbled around the phone. I think that was an accident.
What is the success rate of the Hall Financial Hotline?
With Brandon numbers, zero.
Whoa. It's one for one. It's Gretna.
She did answer the phone.
Don't you go dying on me.
Say that.
What?
I'd say, I don't know, the Brandon number success rate?
Maybe 20%? Maybe? That's pretty nice.
Well, some if you get the voicemail, I mean, it is the right number. I think it's at least 30, 35. There have been streaks. Oh, is this Gretna Van Fleet?
Yes, it is.
Hi, this is the Drew and Mike Show, and we were calling. We'd heard that this great band, Greta Van Fleet, was actually named after you. Is that you?
That would be me.
Oh, my gosh. What a story. Do you have a minute to talk to us?
Tell me again who you said you are. I missed what you said.
It's the Drew and Mike Show in Detroit. It's a radio show.
Oh, okay.
Podcast, actually. We're big fans of the band. And then we heard the story that they're actually named after you because you were on the was your name on the marquee when they were about to play or something like that?
No, one of the original players knew a friend of mine and mentioned my name, and they just kind of liked it and decided to take it.
Hmm. Wow! And is this paid off for you financially?
No, absolutely not.
Really? I mean, is that even of interest? Have they offered anything? Because they've had a lot of success recently. Is there maybe something?
I know. They changed my first name from Gretna with an N in it to Greta.
Oh, so that you couldn't sue them?
No. And that's okay with me. I'm fine with it.
Get your blessing. They got your blessing.
Have you been to any of their shows?
Yes. Here in town when they very first started. Yes, I was there.
Did you like them? Were you grooving?
They're not of my generation.
Oh, they're not cross-generational?
Well...
Do they remind you of Led Zeppelin, though? Because that's what everybody says about them.
That's it, yeah. And I was a little old to be much of a fan of Led Zeppelin either.
Oh, really?
So. What were you into?
The big bands I don't know. I was born in the 1930s, so
well,
I don't know.
You could have been you could have been an Elvis fan.
A little bit.
You like the stuff before Elvis.
I like all kinds of music.
Nothing.
Oh, were you a Beatles fan at all, Gretna?
They were all right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's just maybe you just kind of missed it. But you play the dulcimer, I heard.
I do.
Cool.
I do.
And it might be cool if you played maybe a Greta Van Fleet song on the dulcimer. That would be kind of ironic and interesting, maybe.
Oh, that would be really cool.
That might be.
Yeah.
Is that something you've thought of or absolutely not?
Well, it has been mentioned, but I also play the violin and a few other instruments, too. So I don't want to get too involved with them.
Yeah, really? If you get it on a track, though, on their album, then you will be able to get... some of the,
song credit.
Royalties,
royalties, proceeds.
Yeah, well, I'm looking for those royalty checks any day,
It doesn't sound like you're too interested in being part of this band other than them using your name.
That's right, and I don't have a problem with it. I know the parents, and not well, but I know them.
You know the Kiska, the Kiska family?
The Kiskas?
Kiskas.
Well, they're the twin brothers, that...
Three.
Are the oldest
Josh
ones there,
and
then their younger brother is one of the guitar players.
Oh, you're pretty hip to this thing. So
then I believe the only family the Kiskas have are the three boys. And then the other boy is a local boy,
How old is
too.
This kid?
Yeah, Danny Wagner, who is a great golf player, but he actually gave up the state finals of golf to go touring with Greta Van Fleet.
Are you reading the Wikipedia page?
No.
Gretna, how did you know them, though? I mean...
the original drummer, his grandpa and grandma were friends of ours.
Kyle.
And,
how old is this kid?
How old is he?
How old is who?
Kyle?
The original drummer?
The original drummer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why that matters.
No, it doesn't because we played the drum.
No,
he's like the same age the other kids are.
Oh, okay.
20-ish probably. Something like that.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
The two of them just graduated, and I think Kyle did this year.
I see.
But anyway, Kyle heard my name, and he just told his grandpa, he said, I like that name for the band, and he told the band members, and they took off with it.
It is a very memorable name for a band. I mean, when I first heard of them, the name really stuck with me. Has the name suited you well? I mean, does your name stick with people?
That's a great name.
It's different. People remember it, but sometimes they remember it as Greta or Gretchen or Gretel or whatever.
Okay, so it's not the perfect name. It hasn't served you as well as it served them.
Apparently not.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Are you part of the new tourism?
That's a great name.
The new tourism agenda then in Frankenmuth? There's going up there for chicken and then Christmas and Gretna.
That's a rich treat.
People driving by?
Am I part of it?
Yeah, now do people drive by your house? That's where Gretna Van Fleet lives.
I don't believe I've got that far yet.
Maybe they're just not big enough. But I'm glad you challenged the question. I thought it needed more explanation, too.
But you did win an award from the city of Frankenmuth in 2016, didn't you?
Well,
Brandon.
You must have done your work.
What's that?
I did.
Yeah.
Wow.
You were the 2016 recipient of the Frankenmuth Women's Club Edelweiss Award.
Edelweiss.
Mark, did you know anything? You're German.
I like the way. Gretna challenges everything that comes out of this show, which I think is good. This show needs challenging. Are you enjoying your connection to the band, or is it getting a little wearisome having these obnoxious radio shows call?
Particularly those.
Aww.
No.
Do you get a lot?
It's been fun. I'll have to say that. It has been fun, and lately, since they've got so popular, I can hardly go anywhere downtown. If they hear my name, they know it. You know?
Yeah,
oh,
totally.
Cool, though.
She would not be my first choice. That's
some guy that's thinking of starting a band.
That seems like this would be really good for Frankenmuth and for I don't know about that concept. Why would it be good for Frankenmuth? It's not. They're leaving. They're not going to stay in Frankenmuth, or they'll never get anywhere. I guess it's good for you, and it is good that the town gets mentioned, and it is a tourist location.
Well, it doesn't hurt the town, but as far as the tourism, I can't see that it has any great value except when they do play in town. There's probably a few of the younger set that comes in.
And maybe they'll have a Christmas album.
No, Brandon, they're not going to have a Christmas. That's not happening.
Boring!
She could play the dulcimer on the Christmas album. That'd be her.
That's right.
Yeah, I think we're forcing the issue entirely. But, Gretna, it's really nice to talk to you. And we called earlier, and it seemed like there was a phone hang up. I thought, maybe you weren't taking calls or something. But it was nice of you to take our call when we called back.
I think my husband picked up the phone, may have hit the hang-up button or something. I don't know.
Is he sick of all this?
I'll tell you.
Crap!
Not really, but
he wants a band named after him.
Yeah, what's his name? Yeah. I'm gonna start a band.
I'll tell you what he wants, Dale.
Dale Van Fleet.
Is he as loosey goosey as you are about the making money off the name? Because you seem to have no interest whatsoever. But
she's a basket case.
What if he says suddenly that hey, we're getting ripped off? Laughed. They're using our name. We deserve money out of this. Would he ever say that possibly?
I don't know, but that's not my goal at all whatsoever.
Okay. I just hope it doesn't break up your marriage, because it seems like a lot of people feel their shit money.
After everything, that's the thing that's the breaking point.
It's been 68 years, so what do you think?
Exactly.
68 years?
Wow.
We didn't pull the trigger yet. Is that going to?
Well, I'm sorry I had to go out on the edge there on this, but anyway, no, you're very nice to talk to us, and congratulations on being Gretna Van Fleet and all that means.
Thank you.
And your dulcimer playing, and your award in 2016.
Yeah.
And thank you so much again.
Well, I appreciate the call. I never quite know how to answer, as you probably get the idea what you want to say. And I don't know you, so I hope it's all right.
I know. No, it's just fine. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Have fun with it.
Bye, Gretna.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Hey. Cool. She did damn well.
Really cool.
Fielding the Trump hits.
I know. You do not expect somebody her age to hear drops.
And she laughed.
I know.
Handled it well.
I think she thought she was answering it. She was answering her drop
a woman
at one point.
She's been very ineffective, other than she's got a big mouth.
She's a goofus. She's a total failure.
She's a world-class liar.
She tweets a lot about me. Every once in a while, I'll tweet.
She lied to my face. She believes she's entitled to the office.
She is a goofus.
Trump drops do just blow right in, don't they?
They don't want a woman that sits at home at 3 o'clock in the morning as she's sleeping.
Oh, boy. Was there another? We had another number you liked, didn't you? Wasn't it?
Well, I did track down, although he wasn't answering, Randy Fowler's number.
Oh yeah,
Kevin
Spacey's brother, who is a Rod Stewart impersonator, and he was a limo driver, and I think he worked at a dealership when we found him in the tabloids, and we called him, and he was only too happy to talk.
Really?
He's talking about his father, Kevin Spacey's father, who he said molested him, not Kevin, but him. And he made it sound like Kevin didn't give a shit. Didn't he kind of make it sound that way?
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't really, I don't think he was looking to necessarily take a shot at him. He just sort of suggested he was in his own world and he was older. And
it's not me getting molested, so.
He sort of, it sounded kind of rough.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Did you mention the most exciting thing about him?
Oh, about Randy Fowler?
Yeah.
What about
him? He looks like Rod Stewart?
The limo? He does the Rod Stewart limos?
Oh.
What?
Yeah, I mentioned he was a limo driver.
Oh, yeah.
But the amazing thing is, he doesn't look like Rod Stewart at all. It's not even close.
Rod Stewart.
Because that's,
what do you think, Trudy?
Evidently, who I supposedly look like.
Oh.
You have to see him without the sunglasses.
purposely went out.
The mouth, the teeth, everything's way off.
In the 1980s, when I went on the road.
That could, is that a wig?
Oh, probably. Because he's also a drummer, I believe.
High-end lounge show.
No, come on. That's Kevin Spacey's brother?
Sequins and all that stuff.
The hair is the only thing that's...
Well, it's the clothes.
I guess. I think the Rod Stewart at Pine Knob is better than him. You know the Rod, the Pine Knob Rod Stewart, the DTE Rod Stewart?
Oh, yeah. That.
Thank you, Joey and Tanya. I absolutely love watching her. She's kind of like a little pixie.
It's like a great local show here.
Information. I want to introduce you to Treasure Valley.
Right. Sorry, I can't get any bigger.
Know this amazing man. See,
does he look anything like Rod Stewart?
Limos.
Good morning.
The haircut, if it weren't with, if it didn't have his face in it.
Almost, yes. Well, we've been drinking.
I can't believe the Treasure Valley View 5 was able to land Rod from Rod's Limos for their show.
Never, he's not. Well, you are an amazing, amazing person to stand right next to. I feel completely and totally
underdressed. He's a celebrity?
This is conservative.
That's what you were telling me, and I've seen pictures. Yeah. You are definitely over the top at times, but I think probably people love that about you, don't they?
Over what top?
I think that's one of the reasons why I...
If she doesn't ask him about his brother, Kevin Spacey, this is my interviewer's the worst. Isn't that all anybody wants to know about Randy?
You know, as opposed to just a black suit and a white shirt.
Well, and I think that, you know, I being part of a limousine or even being, you know, part
of
somebody
who's... girl cousin.
It's a step out of the ordinary, and that definitely is something that you offer.
Yes.
For sure. So tell me, how did Rod's limos,
Rod
how did that
Stewart,
all come about?
Rod would not
place?
Drive you to something. You would drive Rod. It doesn't make sense, does it, that a Rod Stewart impersonator would drive people places?
No, it's... There's no logic behind this.
Just so getting a thumbs down.
Yeah, sure, no problem. I'll do that. And I get.
Had you ever driven before?
No, and it was a real small limousine. It was like a little six passenger.
Oh, just six.
No English accent, and it doesn't look like him. It makes no sense.
Tonight's the night at Rod's Limos. Limousine changes people to rich and famous. At Rod's Limos,
are they yelling for him?
Yeah.
For all your special occasions.
Then why is he driving?
Royalty and the memories.
He rolled out the red carpet.
You can even request what
for himself?
Clothes you'd like him to wear. For weddings,
you request
clothes?
What clothes?
What?
And so much more.
Wait, you can is that phone number good?
That one's not, but we have another one from because we've actually talked to him before.
We interviewed him on 105.1.
So is Rod's Limos out of business? Or
yes.
Is it?
It is now defunct.
How did that happen?
Wait, that's crazy. Being driven places by Rod Stewart? Well, he probably tried to charge a lot, too, because Rod Stewart's driving you, even though he doesn't look like Rod Stewart.
Actually, wouldn't it be a better sell that it was Kevin Spacey's brother? Because at least he is Kevin Spacey's brother as opposed to not looking like
I'm actually more Rod interested Stewart. In finding out what happened with Rod's Limos than what happened with Kevin Spacey at the moment. You know, I he could change my mind. I don't know how much he's going to want. I think this guy just likes attention. He's probably going to talk to us if he answers the phone, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, totally. He better.
Do you think? Oh, he's probably getting phone calls, though, huh?
What's that, Joe?
He's probably getting
phone
calls.
Talked to him. Yeah. If he hears the music, he may get really pumped. Maybe we can select an outfit for him for the interview.
Ooh, there's an ooh.
Yeah. Was this, I'm sexy?
Yeah.
This is, isn't it?
I predict he sold Rod's Limos to another limo company.
What? What?
Rod?
Randy!
He picked up, but he hung up.
I would have thought he would have heard
Randy.
The music, and he would have jumped in.
Pussy!
He would have jumped into character. I think he should call back.
Yeah.
Are there two numbers?
Yeah, there are two.
Sounds like an accidental.
I wonder if he got the whole idea of driving people offended him. So he had to get out of the business.
Oh, because he felt more and more like Rod Stewart?
Yeah.
And less like.
Getting in character.
God, I hate
he
this.
He got lost in it. Hello?
Run Randy. Oh, he's just picking up and hanging up. He's getting a million calls and he's bumming out.
Why is he picking up his phone and then hanging up?
I think someone like us ruined it already.
Yeah, but
he had that one interview.
Turn the phone down.
Just leave it. Yeah, exactly.
Why go to the trouble?
He gave the interview, the other interview.
I know.
One more time.
I just wonder if someone like us has called him since then and bummed him out.
Report the problem.
Should I try the other number I have
for
him? Okay.
Is he married?
Yes.
He is, okay.
Trish is her name.
Wow, what a lucky lady. Married to someone that doesn't look like Rod Stewart, but pretends he does.
There's none of Rod Stewart's money.
Yeah, and is not hot. And has a limo service.
Probably not musically talented.
Pretend he's hot. He has the ego of a hot guy without being hot.
I drive a Dodge Stratus!
I'm glad we're revisiting this story, because even if this Kevin Spacey thing passes, we need to call him again. We need to get him on.
This is Greg. Sorry I missed your call. Please leave a message. Thank you.
Ray, isn't it Randy?
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Ray, I thought this was Randy's number. Oh, is Randy?
He said Randy, yeah.
Oh, Randy. Okay. Yeah, I didn't hear that too well. Anyway, we saw the story about Kevin, and we're really more fascinated with the whole Rod Stewart thing. But anyway, we'd love to talk to you if you got a few minutes.
We've talked to you before. You had a great time.
Yeah, you had a ball with us on
about 2 years ago
on radio in Detroit, and gave us a great interview. It was really very professional, and you seemed to really enjoy it. I think it was one of your favorites. Anyway, please call us if you get a chance. You'll probably see the phone number there. And good luck. I'm sorry about what's going on. I know it's probably not something you're crazy about talking about. But anyway, we're like I said, you remember how professional we are from before. So hope you call back. See you.
Also, bye.
Okay, you're trying to Obi-Wan into his head that we were professional, or you were professional, and that he had a good time.
Yeah, he did. Oh, he did have a good time. Make no mistake about that.
Cause you didn't want to be alone.
Bye.
And hello.
Jackie, how are you?
I'm good. You know, I'm out doing errands, and I arm wrestled. My car would not let me take the call on my phone.
By the way, it's Drew, Mark, and Maz.
Hey, Jackie.
Hey, Jack.
Right
hey,
here.
Hey, Drew, Mark, and Maz. Yeah, that's great. You know, the guy that taught me to play guitar, my oldest friend since I was 5 years old, his name is Chris Bates. And, of course, for 70 years, we've called him Master Bates, and his nickname is Maz.
Aww.
So I can't believe I'm talking to another second Maz I've ever met. Hello, Maz.
Hey, what's up, Jack?
Now we have a new name for our Maz.
Is that short for masturbation?
It is now.
Could be.
Jackie, I couldn't wait to read the book because, you know, we had our Drew and Mike show here in Detroit for a long, long time. And, of course, Howard was always up there in New York and all those other markets. And you were a big part of that for so long. So it was really fun to read about the show and what you guys were doing. And I can't help but ask, after seeing the beginning of the book, did you ever use that mechanical engineering degree you spent 7 years at Michigan State?
Yeah, of course I did. Are you kidding? I used my diploma to roll pot.
It sounded like a...
But it really is true. I graduated from Michigan State as a mechanical engineer because my father had gone to college for like a year in Alabama as an engineer, and I knew if I didn't take a difficult major that I would drink myself right out of college. So I took a really difficult major, and I don't know if you know, but mechanical engineering is no waltz in the park. You know, it's like atomic physics and mechanics and chemistry. And I had a great tech average. You know, I was walking around the engineering building with a ponytail and bare feet and a dog, you know, and meanwhile people cheating off my paper. You know, it was a wild time to be in school, late 60s. Wow.
But you had a band and you were doing stand up, and my God, you've had 516-922-WINE for 38 years. I can't get over it. Do people still call the joke line a lot? We called earlier in the show.
Of course they do. You know what? There's nothing more fun. I'm going to write a whole book about that stupid joke line because people come up to me and they say, oh, man, you know, I used to call you joke line in the 80s, or I used to call you joke line in the 90s. And I say to them, yeah, well, it's still going. And they say, what are you talking about? And meanwhile, everybody's got a cell phone. I say, well, take it out, 516-922-9463. And it's exactly like it was 35 years ago. Hello, this is Jackie. You know how much I love it when you use your finger. And people go, you know, that was one of the first things Howard said to me was, I really like that use your finger, that you know, your little intro there. And it's been the same forever, and it's gotten me so much stuff. It got me Governor's Comedy Shop, and it got me onto Rick Dees, and Rick Dees was actually the guy that named me the Joke Man. I mean, there's a whole history of that stupid number, you know?
Yeah, I read the Rick Dees part. That was interesting, and you heard about somebody in Wisconsin. We used to call that line in Roanoke, Virginia, from WROV, and occasionally you'd have something we could actually run on the air, and sometimes not so much. But I was well aware of the number going way back, and I had no idea it was still running, but... anyway, you know, you're such a hustler, Jackie. It was really fun to read the book because I remember, you know, being in small markets, of course, having to hustle all these tapes out all the time. And it was such a hassle, but it sounded like nothing compared to you. I mean, making albums and selling them yourself and starting this comedy club. You just mentioned, is it Grosvenor's? Is that what you said?
Governor's Comedy Shop on Long Island. Still
Governor's.
Going strong.
Yeah, and that was a, wasn't that an old restaurant, and you took it over and reformed it into a comedy club?
No, well, I didn't own it. It was a rock and roll club that was about to be shut down by the neighbors because it was too loud. And after they'd been shut down by the police a few times, they said, you know, we should do something different. And somebody said, let's start a comedy show maybe. And they said, hey, why don't we get that guy with the joke phone number? And they called me up, and I went over there and said, you know, me and my girlfriend at the time, who became my wife, Nancy, we said, all right, put a speaker here and a speaker here and put a stage here and put the chairs there. And bang, we had a really successful comedy club from the word go, which was just, it was, you know, I've been so lucky and unlucky and so, you know, luck favors the prepared, but I've had so many miscues and incredible feats of luck. I mean, it's such a mishmash. I tell everyone my life's been like a pinball machine. You know, it's like from one thing to the next, and this works, and this didn't. And it's just been one crazy ride. And now it's crazy again. You know, I was rich for a while, but now I'm back to hustling. And you know, it's the same old crap. It's the same old crap, you know?
Well, before you got rich... You sold a few jokes to Rodney Dangerfield. And that was a great story. You know, you mentioned the Tennessee two-bagger joke, which a friend of yours had called you in the middle of the night, and you remember the joke. And then you had another friend who had met Rodney, but he hadn't really met Rodney, but he had the matchbox. And so you took a bunch of jokes, and you wrote them down, and you sent them to Rodney to try and sell him jokes. And he loved that Tennessee two-bagger joke. One for you, or one for her, and one for you in case hers breaks or whatever, which, of course...
That was just a classic. Now, that guy, I met that guy at a place called My Father's Place, which is a very famous club on Long Island, and coincidentally, it's been 30 years, and it's just starting up again this weekend of all the crazy... Well, not this weekend, the weekend after Thanksgiving. My Father's Place is a famous club that's going to open back up after all these years. But that guy, Richie Minervini, wound up opening the East Side Comedy Club, and now he travels with Kevin James. He's Kevin James' opening act, and he's a stand-in for him, and he's been in most of Kevin's movies. And, you know, we're best pals for the last 35 years, and it's just been such an amazing trek, you know. This guy gets good luck, and then this guy gets bad luck, and then this guy, you know. It's a whole really interesting thing, you know, and the stories about the comics and the clubs, it just never gets old. You know, I go on Gilbert Gottfried's podcast a couple times, and we just howl. You know, we just howl at the craziness, you know.
Yeah, and traveling with Rodney, because Rodney invited you after you sold him some jokes to go down to Fort Lauderdale and then on to Vegas, and God, what a pile of stories there. First, the one that killed me was... You know, Rodney, all of his bags, all of his luggage, and then the cardboard box that's kind of hastily taped up, and his toaster oven, which had to go everywhere with him.
You know, I don't know how hard to believe that is, because I know when I was standing there, I was looking at those goddamn cardboard boxes with the string. It wasn't even twine, it was string. And I remember looking at it going, who would ever believe this? I'm looking at it and I don't believe it, you know? It was just so storybook. It was like that movie Almost Famous. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was caught in the middle of this insanity, you know, and there's so much that didn't make it into the book. I have a whole second book, a whole 300 other pages that was just what didn't fit. Not to mention I probably could make 5 volumes.
Well,
but there's stories about Rodney that never got in there that are just so Oh, just great, you know.
Well, I love how that, you know, you kind of set up the room for him because he had all that stuff and he really needed some help, and you were a young guy then. And so...
Was it at Dangerfield?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, you guys were traveling. You went to Fort Lauderdale and then to Vegas. But yeah, you had Dangerfield at the time in New York, which is where you sent the jokes. But I like that he let you go. You guys did a couple lines of cocaine before you had to set up the room, just so you had a little extra energy, I guess, right?
Yeah, you know, no, he was so gracious and so generous, and we had so much fun. He'd go, you know, he'd say, yeah, you want to set the room? I know, you want a toot, right? You want a toot. I said, yeah, fuck yes, I want a toot, you know. Oh, it was great. Just great.
I can't believe Rodney was a tutor.
Stop it.
Oh, Rodney loved pot, too, didn't he?
You name it, he loved it, you know, and the hookers and pot and, you know, everything. And we had so much fun.
And he shared hookers, too.
Yeah, that story is, you know, I'm sure that there's comics that read that and they know it's on the level. But I'm sure there's a certain degree of layman that read that just build into it like, well Jackie's, you know, adding this story a little bit because, you know, but there is not an exaggerated syllable in that book. And I would swear on my mother's grave, I'm telling you, every wow. letter about Howard and Rodney and everybody is the truth. But I also would not blame a person for saying I don't believe any of it because I was there and I didn't believe some of it, you know.
Jesus Christ.
We sat there and got so loaded with Paul Williams and his wife, and it was like I'm pissing myself. You know, I'm still remembering shit that happened that, you know, he's just taking and packing all in. You know,
the book's called "The Joke Man: Bow to Stern" by Jackie Martling, and we're talking to Jackie, of course, Jackie the Joke Man. And Jackie, it was interesting reading about the Stern Show, of course, as I mentioned earlier, and you. I wondered if you would talk about stuff that maybe you had thought better of. And the only thing I really noticed in the book there were a couple things. One, you had gotten in a bathtub with Jessica Hahn and with Howard, and it sounded so stupid and innocent. But, of course, Howard blew it up into this big thing. And your wife hears it from her friends, and that turned into a total disaster. You were supposed to go to Italy the next day, I guess, and she said she wanted to travel with you.
2 days later, we were supposed to go to Europe for 2 weeks for her sister's wedding, you know, a week in Italy and a week in Paris. And like, you know, my therapist just said, do whatever you got to do to get her on that plane. And, you know, and there's not a list out of the 20 million phone listeners. I'm sure 25 million of them think that Nancy put a gun to my head and said, you better go in there and apologize to me. And it had nothing to do with her. It was totally me saying, what the hell can I possibly do? And that was like, the first salvo I thought I could fire. I didn't know what else to do, you know. I could not go to work. And, you know, and it helped. But that was, yeah, it was so heartfelt. It was so, everybody said, doesn't that bother you when they replay it? And I'm like, boom. It was something I really meant. And it worked. You know, I mean, I don't know how I would feel bad if it hadn't worked and she hadn't wanted to put a bullet in my head.
And it didn't sound like...
It was so interesting, you know. That was so crazy. You know, I still remember being so drunk and saying to myself, well, if I keep my blue jeans on, there's no foul here. And I still believe there's no foul here. It's not like I was rubbing my dick up again, you know?
Yeah, it sounded like you took a lot of crap for not a lot of fun, which is always a drag to get in a lot of trouble, and it wasn't even worth it. But then the time of the month contest, it sounded like maybe you had a little regret about that, where you brought in girls, and I guess you had to predict which one was...
You know what? That was so absurd. Like, it must have been one of those things where she had just, you know, it was just literally the stool that broke the camel's back. Because it was, you know, that was so ridiculous. But, you know, you get to a certain point where, and like I said in the book, I'm still in the house at the point where we were so jaded that, you know, I mean, listen to this sentence. What's the big deal? We were stoned girls to see a bill in the rag. You know, that sentence is so absurd. Of course it's a big deal, you moron. It's like, imagine now, imagine if Al Franken was smelling pizza.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, it's the...
You can't run for Senate.
The evolution of an edgy radio show, what can you say? I wondered if there were...
Somebody wrote to me today and said, how you doing? I said, well, I'm going to be fine until the politically correct police pick me up for 57 years of infraction.
What's the statute of limitations on you, huh?
Jackie, what do you think?
Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus.
You must have met a lot of these people who are popping up in the news. Has there been anybody that you've met that surprised you when you see these allegations? Like, oh, yeah, I'm not surprised. That guy's a creep.
You know, it's so funny. You can't be surprised. I never met Charlie Rose. But if anybody ever said to me, you know who's the pussy hound, Charlie Rose, I would have spit my coffee out.
I know.
You know what I mean? He looks like a bloodhound. You know what I mean? Like, you can't do that math. It's like the first time I heard Raymond Burr was gay. I'm like, oh, hey, he's a homo? Come on. But then you put it all together, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you, Trump, my whole thing about Trump is he's so full of crap. I don't think that guy is so far away from being a pussy machine. It's not funny. You could tell how full of crap he is. He marries a model off the boat. Then he divorces her. He gets together with this really cute girl that wants to be an actress, locks her away in his hotel, and he starts telling the Post keeps running articles about how he's the greatest, you know, the greatest lover in the world. And meanwhile, those gossip things were called in by his publicist. What was him?
Yeah.
He was calling up and saying, Donald Trump, the model of Maple says Donald Trump's the best partner ever. He gets rid of her, gets himself another model off the boat. And then he's on that bus with Billy Bush. Listen, I'm 69 years old. I know comedians and musicians my entire life. I'm as horny as any five of them. And everybody I know is horny and crazy and pussy monsters. And out of all these crazy people I've known for all these decades, I don't know one guy that ever walked into a girl and grabbed her by the pussy. It's just not something to do. That is not in the lexicon of anybody that's trying to do anything with a woman. I don't know anybody that just walks up to a girl and starts kissing her and seems to say, yeah, I just walk up and kiss him and I grab him by the pussy. That's like a third grader, you know, like rubbing caca in a girl's face. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And then he says, oh, I came on to him like a bitch. That's not even an expression. This is a guy trying to play the role of a pussy man. And he is not. I don't think that guy could get laid in a whorehouse with a $1,000 bill, I swear to God. I don't think he knows his ass from his elbow. I think he went to military school and didn't come out gay. He just came out stupid. And I don't think the whole thing about him being getting this whole reputation of being this womanizer, it is so far off the track. You know, it's everything about the guy is just such horseshit. And you know, he's the president. He's the president.
Yeah.
What the hell kind of country are you guys running?
Jackie,
answer me.
Were you
answer me, man?
I can't answer you. I can't. No.
Jesus Christ.
I'm following you. I kind of want to put him in the category with Weinstein and Toback and Charlie Rose. I declare that they're just absolute nerds who got some power and they didn't really know how to pull women because they probably never did. So they're doing things. I don't know. I don't want to make excuses for
them. They don't know. Didn't understand the Louis C.K. thing because I'll tell you, I'm a horny bastard. I've done some things that if I ever wrote them down and you read them back to me, I'd deny them, right? But I have never jumped off in front of a girl. I don't understand that.
We were just saying that ourselves.
If the girl's there, she's there. Why are you jumping off? If the girl's right there, what the hell's wrong with you? You know, go home and jump off or jump on the girl if you see. You know, but I guess, you know, whatever floats your boat, you know.
Yeah, I think maybe you need to back off the phone just a tiny bit, Jackie. You might be overmodulating, or is it?
No,
is that,
I don't care. I'm just trying to wreck the machine. I don't know about you guys, but I'm 69 years old, and I can still masturbate twice. I swear to God, and you know my favorite one is the one in the fall.
Hey, Jackie.
That's a great switch on an old joke. I just switched that around about a week ago, and everybody's laughing their ass off.
No, that's great. You know, when you were talking about regrets from the show, I couldn't help wondering, because Howard, the show is very much evolved, and I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I still think it's a great show, and I love listening to 101, and I love hearing the stuff that you're on. But I wondered if you had any feelings at the time, you know, when Howard went to Philadelphia and took DiBella down, and you mentioned the funeral in the book, which, you know, that's kind of, a lot of radio people have done stuff like that, and Howard did it better than anyone else. But DiBella was really personally maligned pretty badly. And in fact, I believe it was his ex-wife who came on the Dial-A-Date show on Howard show. I mean, it was really personal. Did anybody feel like, hey, this is over the line? I don't know.
Well, I will tell you the absolute truth. I knew John DiBella from the 70s. I worked at a recording studio, which is where I learned enough about recording that I could make my own album. You know? And he was a DJ at WLIR on Long Island. And he used to come in, they would hire him to do voiceovers. You know, him and Beck Griffin, and, you know, there were people on Long Island that would come in to voice the local spots. And he was kind of a friend. I knew him, and we actually hosted some shows at that place, my father's place. We had the Long Island Ha Ha, believe it or not. But he was such a pompous ass, always. I mean, he was okay. He was a pal, kind of. But he was always so pompous, even before he was anybody. When he was just a local DJ, he was pompous. And then he was really hot shit in Philadelphia. He had like a 13 share, which was unheard of. I was working in Philadelphia for years before I met Howard Stern. And 79, 80, 81, I was working at the Comedy Factory Outlet and Bananas and the Comedy Works. So we used to go on his radio show, and he ruled the roof. I mean, they used to just about send, you know, in the rickshaw for him to bring him to Atlantic City, because if he said, hey, I'm going to Atlantic City, the whole state emptied that. You know, he had this crazy power. And they said, there's no way you could syndicate to Philadelphia because he's not touchable. And he was so pompous about it. So when we finally brought him down, it was a big deal.
Oh, I agree.
It was over the line. It was absolutely over the line. And I'm telling you, there was times with him and then this guy, Mancow, in Chicago, when Howard said, yeah, I hope his father passed away. And he said, yeah, I want to dig up your daddy's skull and have sex with your dead daddy's skull and stuff. And I wanted to hold up one. You know those disclaimers that come on a TV show that, you know, what you're seeing right now is not necessarily the views of the entire management, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want people to think that I was writing any of that really heinous. You know, my job was to keep the show funny, not make it mean. I never did anything, unless it was very funny, I didn't do anything to make that show mean. And I'm not excusing myself. That was, to my mind, that was my job description. Well, I made him funny enough that he could get away with the mean stuff. Well, you see what I'm saying?
It's fun. No, I understand what you're saying. And with Mancow, that was really a two-way street. But and DiBella, I understand. I'm sure he was a pompous guy. I never thought a show was that great, personally. It didn't surprise me a bit that Howard took him down. It just seemed so personal, beyond and over the top.
Yeah, going after the wife, and then she went suicide. And I mean, it was way over. But that, you know, people say stuff about Howard, and it's funny because I defend him so much. He, listen, he definitely did stuff that you absolutely should never, ever do in this lifetime. But the thing is, that's the animal. You know what I mean? If he wasn't like he is, he wouldn't be who he is. So it's kind of, you know, you can't really throw out the baby with the bathwater. You know, it's hard to know, you know, when you swing in a club like that. I don't really know. I'm not really defending him as much as, like, I understand the animal. You know, like, when you have eye of the tiger like that, you just have blinders on and you're, you know, it was like full steam ahead, you know, and it was crazy. It was crazy all the time, you know.
I understand what you're saying. You know, as far as leaving the show, and I want to talk a little bit about that too, but you and Artie and Billy West, I noticed his picture in the book, and you mentioned that Billy is sort of persona non grata. Are the three of you persona non grata on the show now? I mean, could you go on and promote?
You know what? I have no idea. I don't listen to the show, and all I know is what I hear from people. And, you know, one person will tell me the show is better than ever, and the next person will say the show is horrible. And, you know, I don't listen. And I don't listen to the people either. I don't really care. I don't know what Artie's relationship is with them, and I don't know what Billy's relationship is with them, except that they don't go on. I mean, Billy's still a very good friend of mine, and I just did Artie and Anthony's show a couple days ago. I mean, they're all good friends of mine. As far as me, I have no idea. I haven't been on the show in a long time. And, you know, it's funny because I said to somebody, you know, I can't really say they won't have me on with my book if I don't ask. So I finally wrote an email to Gary, and I CC'd Howard and Fred and Robin and said, hey, you know, I'm sure you're aware I have a book out. I'd love to come on and promote it. I knew they would never ask me, but if you don't ask, you can't say they said no. You know what I mean? So I don't know if you know, but I used to read from Robin's book, and it was very funny. And I said, you know, tomorrow Robin can read my book, you know, just being goofy. Yeah. But of course, I never heard from them, you know, but wow. I don't know. I don't think there's any animosity. I don't know. I don't understand any of it. I know they don't have Gilbert on anymore, or Lisa Lampanelli.
What happened to Gilbert?
Do you blame the...
I don't know. I do not know the answer to that. I'm hoping they're going to have him on because he's got this documentary out that's just,
yeah,
it's going to win the Academy Award, and it's so good. And because it's Gilbert and his wife and his two kids, and it's really not believable. You know, if it was fiction, you'd say, wow, that's a great movie, but it's real, you know.
You know,
he's a delightful character, and he's so different. But and it's really artistic. The documentary is really a slice of life. I'm hoping as I'm speaking to you that they're calling him and saying, all right, Gilbert, come on the show, you know.
Jackie, he's one of my all-time favorite guests because of how different he is when the mic goes off after he performs. I mean, he's just a sweet, nice man who was asking for free T-shirts.
Oh, yeah, you know, but, you know, he wouldn't show up, he wouldn't come in the building unless they had breakfast for him. You know, but he's so consistent. You know, I've worked with him so many times and done so much with him, you know. I did his podcast. I did an hour show and we did 90 minutes because we couldn't shut up. And then I did two more half hours. You know, his guy Frank, who works with him, they just love me because I got these horrible old show business stories that are so disgraceful, you know. But he really is from a different. He's cut from a different cloth, and it's really fun, you know.
Jackie, how much do you blame? So if they wouldn't have you on, I don't know if you want police blame for you, but maybe Gilbert or especially Lisa. How much do you put that on Marcy Turk?
You know what? I don't know. I don't know anything about her. I don't know what the deal is. I know that this woman showed up and changed the show, and it's still hard for me to wrap my brain around it, but that was long after I was gone. Mm-hmm. So I have no idea, but you know, you hear this story and that story, you know, but the truth of it is, as far as I know, as far as everything I ascertained in 18 years is it's Howard's show and Howard gets what he wants. And if he decided to put somebody between him and everybody else, so somebody else can say, you're in, you're out. You know, he's allowed to do that. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he's not going to go say, hey, Gilbert, I don't want you on the show anymore. So, you know, right. I think that, in other words, she would not be orchestrating that without him, you know, she might be saying this would be best for you and he might be going along with it, but there's nothing happening that's not, you know, absolute rubber stamp by him. And I'm not saying that to break his balls. I'm saying that because he's the genius that made him what he is, and he got where he got by listening to himself before he listened to anyone else. You know what I mean?
It's not as mean-spirited a show as it used to be. I mean, Howard still, I still love when he breaks into his mother and his father, or, you know, the things that he does that just spin out of his head. I love the show, but some people complain that, you know, the edge isn't quite what it was, but I think that's, just, I assume that's him evolving. I don't, you know, I'm not sure what to make of it.
Listen, you know, he 20 years ago, he was 20 years younger. You know, everybody evolves, you know. Yep. Did you ever see a 90-year-old Nazi war criminal?
No,
it's so funny. You're like, oh, look at that little gentle man, you know. He said, yeah, How you doing? Yeah, I remember the good old days when I killed 45,000 Jews in an afternoon. Like, holy Christ, you know, how do you do that math? You know, Jesus. But you know, it's the same guy, you know. But yeah, no, he's certainly a lot to evolve, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I still love the show. And I got to tell you, I love the stuff on 101, too, and I love the stuff you're on. And you know,
I don't even know. I heard that they're not playing anything with me in it anymore.
Well, you know, not enough. I can tell you this. I used to hear more on 101 with you on it, and it was always funny, and your laugh is so infectious.
Jokers.
I have to ask, did you intentionally laugh harder at your own jokes when you passed them to Howard?
No, you know, I think I spelled that out pretty well in the book. It's, I'm a comedian, and I laugh judging by how funny something is. If I'm watching TV and something's funny, I laugh. If it's really funny, I laugh hard, you know, and that's how I am. Like Robin, if you say somebody tripped over a wire, she's like, and then you tell the funniest joke in the world, she goes, but me, my laugh was absolutely, would register in accord to how funny the joke was. And, of course, I thought a lot of the things I wrote were very funny or I wouldn't have put them up there. But I laughed. You know, there was many times I'd come home and Nancy would say, you know, the funniest thing you wrote today was such and such. And I said, no, Fred wrote that. She goes, but you laughed so hard. I'm like, because it was so fucking funny. You know, or she'll say, you know what was the funniest thing you wrote today, such and such. No, I always said that on his own. Yeah, but you laughed so hard because it was so funny. It was never... I'm laughing harder because I wrote it. That I never, ever did that, ever. It was honestly, that's what made the show work. You know, if you laugh too hard at something that wasn't funny, then all of a sudden it became every other radio show in America.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sometimes I put something up that wasn't all that funny and I'd snicker, you know.
There's something you mentioned in the book that, it's a little off the subject, but you were talking about the fact that when they did the Toyota show, which was a live show, Howard didn't bring you to the live show and said there wasn't money for you, but you were thinking that maybe he didn't want the live audience to see you passing him jokes. And in the same vein, you mentioned that you had complimented the Elton John parody that Fred did. You thought it was one of the best things he'd ever done, and you got dumped, that he actually dumped the compliment out of the show.
Once again, you know, I fault Howard for that, but I also realize that's Eye of the Tiger. You know, when it comes to that show, if something goes under Fred's column, that doesn't just go under Fred's column. It's a zero-sum game. If all of a sudden Fred wrote that, that means Howard didn't. You see what I'm saying? And in the early days, like people, you should see the emails I get from people. You're so full of crap, Martling. Everybody knew you were writing jokes. What are you talking about? People don't know that the first couple of years, it wasn't a secret, but it was not common knowledge that I was writing jokes and passing them. And to this day, I run into people that still have no idea that I was ever writing jokes, that had no idea. I've run into show business people that are like, what are you talking about? Because I would sit there and they would break my balls and I had a good laugh. So that was almost enough to warrant me being in that room. So the fact that I was, you know, writing so many of the things he was saying that was so funny, people didn't even know. And they really had no idea. And a lot of people would be, like when we first started going on the road, you know, the articles like, you know, Los Angeles Times, where a guy came to see us live, at, you know, at the Key Club or something, say, Jesus Christ, Jackie Marling sat there and was firing line after line after line to Howard. Who the hell knew that, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it wasn't a secret, but, and the Toyota show happened so early on that, you know what, and I don't know that for a fact. You know, maybe they didn't have me for enough budget for me, you know, but usually, you know, I'm 69 years old, and I've learned that your gut is not always right, but like Damon Run, that's the way to bet. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, usually, you know, I'm at the point in my life where I meet somebody and I know pretty cool if I like them or not. And you're not always right. Sometimes somebody will surprise you and they'll turn out to be an asshole or they'll turn out to be a great person and you could be wrong in your first assessment. But it's scary how right you usually are. You know, the first couple minutes, you know, this guy's an asshole or this guy's a great guy. And very often your gut assessment is correct. You know what I'm talking about? I don't know what I'm talking about, but I hope you do.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you all the way, Jackie. And as far as giving people credit, I don't, you know, maybe I'm stupid like this, but I think if other people in the show become beloved, it just makes the show bigger. The idea that the host has to get credit for everything, I don't know, it's a little megalomaniacal, but maybe he had to be a little...
Oh, you think so? You really think that?
Yeah.
You know, it's like one of those things like after 18 years that somebody might put their hand out and say, look, share a few shekels. You know, that's like, you know, who knows? But once again, it's the whole eye of the tiger thing. But, you know, they used to get all bent out of shape when I called this the Beatles of radio. Because to Howard, we were not the Beatles. There weren't four of us. There was him and the other people that happened to sneak into the room. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that he didn't like that analogy. Everybody made fun of it. But Jesus, if we weren't the Beatles of radio, who the fuck was, right?
No, I get it. I totally get it.
Easily and, you know, the best ensemble.
I hate that. Hey,
where are you joke. Guys physically? Where are you physically in Detroit?
We're in the basement of my house in Ferndale.
Ferndale? Yeah. My first manager, Roby Warren, lived in Ferndale.
Is that
wow,
right?
That's a pisser.
Yeah.
My roommate was from Livonia. My college girlfriend was from Oak Park.
Oh, wow.
All around here.
All of my friends were from Birmingham and Bloomfield Hills. And one of my best friends lives in Roseville?
Oh, yeah.
Roseville.
Yeah,
Roseville.
Sure. Roseville. The Ritz and Roseville.
Oh, I spent so much time in Detroit. Oh, my God. You know, yeah. I played for 6 weeks. We played at a motorcycle bar in Lincoln Park.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Is that a section?
Yeah.
It was Lincoln Park, Detroit. It was 1971, and it was 2 years later, and the motorcycle guys had just discovered LSD. Holy Christ. I should have a Purple Heart for playing that club. Holy Christmas.
Jackie, do you ever play Ridley's in Royal Oak?
I never played Mark Ridley's in Royal Oak, and at one point, they actually wanted me to go out there to help gather up people. They wanted to send me on the road to find people in the different markets to be part of our talent contest for the New Year's Eve pageant. And the Detroit club was going to be Ridley's. And I didn't do it because, you know, I was making so much money going to clubs. And all of a sudden, the Stern Show is going to send me different clubs for, like, almost no money, like... I was the guy who would go on the road for the show because I was the only guy that had an act. So they kind of thought, well, that'd be good. Jackie could go out and be our ambassador and not have to pay me. And it's like, you know, they were making so much money. And it's just, don't get me going. You know,
well,
I never played. What is it, Comedy Castle?
Yeah, the Comedy Castle. Yeah, it's a great club. I was kind of, you know, talking about that when we were talking about your book. The fact that you did so much stand-up and you did so much work around there, and yet you weren't a guy I really saw on Comedy Central all the time. I mean, when comedy was blowing up, you were so associated with that show, and I wondered, were you just so busy with that show that you couldn't travel that much?
You know what? I've been ignored for, you know, my entire career because I'm an old guy who tells jokes. You know, I didn't even start on the Stern Show. I didn't get my first paycheck from the Howard Stern Show until I was 38 years old. 38.
Wow.
You know, and you know, if you're being a comedian, there's two things you're not supposed to do. You're not supposed to tell old jokes, and you're not supposed to laugh at yourself. And that's the only two things that I can tell old jokes and laugh at myself. So, you know, a lot of people look down their nose at me. So for 40 years, I've never gotten anywhere. No HBO, no Showtime, no nothing. The only thing I've done for 40 years is stand in front of people for an hour and make them laugh harder than they ever laughed in their fucking lives. And I've had so many people tell me that I've never laughed that hard for an hour. And I always say, well, why don't you go out the street and tell somebody, for Christ's sake, you know? The last show I did before I left the show was at the end of... I left on March 4th, 2001, and it's the very end of Detroit. I did a sold-out show at the Royal Oak Music Box.
Yeah, Royal Oak Music Theater. That's about 2 miles from here, Jackie. I was just wondering if you want to come to Detroit, we'd love to promote it. I'm sure you could do really well here.
Hey, I would kill to come out to Detroit because my college roommate. I don't know if you read the book, but those stories about my college roommate. I miss all my guys. It always made me crazy because we were on all over the country, and we were so late getting to Detroit. It was one of the last markets that we hit, and you know, by the time I came out to work at the Royal Oak Music Hall, all my friends were 1,000 years old, you know. And but I had so much show, and it's so much fun, and you know, I would love to come out there and do a show. And I have a good friend who Paselius is trying to get me a book signing out there. I would love to come out there and sign some books and do a show and whatever you guys can rig up. You know, I don't need to make a lot of money. I just want to come out there for the. I haven't been out there in so long, and there's so many people I'd like to see. Like, that could be a riot.
Well, the Magic Bag in Ferndale. I mean, they do stand up over there. Yeah. That's a 500 seater or so, and it's a great place.
Paul
to
Willie
play.
Wilson for you.
Yeah.
Maz is going to set it up.
Hook it up, and let's do it. You're
on the hook, Maz.
You got it.
I don't know if I got your email or if you got my email, but email me your information so I can send you guys some jokes and
for sure.
And I don't have the address. I hopefully they sent you some books, but
we got the book.
But let's be in contact because I've been hungry to get to Detroit. Just you know, I got people saying I'm coming. I've been saying that for years, and they're dying. You know, my guitar player died, my drummer died. You know, there's nobody left. I got to get out there before I die. You son of a bitch. What are you doing?
Jackie, you're still such a hustler, man. I can't believe how hard you work and how, you know, like doing the Stern Show all those years. And you mentioned the end of the show, and I want to talk about that because that's really one of those fascinating things in the book. And people have always wondered what happened. How could this thing fall apart? You know, it was such a great thing for you. I'm amazed that all those years you were on that show getting up at 4:20 in the morning, which you hated because you liked your beer and you liked to stay up late and you weren't really a morning guy. And you did those comedy gigs on the weekend. Was there ever a time where you said, you know what, I just got to do this radio show and forget the comedy gigs on the weekend? Because
if I had any brain, I would have done that. If I had any brain, I used to say to Mel, pay me more so I don't have to work on the weekend. But then as we got bigger, you know, if you're a comedian and you're doing a show, you know, for $200 and all of a sudden they're offering you $15,000 to do the act that you did for $200. You know, I defy you to stay home. You know, I mean, I was, you know, there were mornings, you know, I'd get up at 4:20 and go do the show and then drive to the airport. And at those days, there were no direct flights to Las Vegas after 12 o'clock noon. So I'd have to fly to Phoenix and connect on America West and go to Vegas. And then the first, you know, the show would be at 10 o'clock, but that's 1 o'clock. I've been up since 4:20, and the show was at 10 o'clock, which was 1 o'clock. And then I'd do the show, and of course, after the show, we'd all go to my suite and get loaded. I mean, and then all of a sudden you fly home, and you're up at 4:20 Monday. You know, after 15 years of that, I was ready to put a bullet in my head. I was rich and famous and happy. But so tired, and you know what you guys you work. You know what it's like when you're so exhausted.
No,
it's things are just not fun. And
I've been
after
there.
All that time, I realized I'm not going to change my ways. You know, take a nap, Jackie. Relax. Stop taking so many gigs. But I knew I couldn't change. So I had to break the omelet to get. I had to break the egg to make the omelet. You know.
Jackie, it almost...
people are still yelling at me, but I don't care. For 17 years, I've been sober, happy.
Good for you.
I got laid once back in 2011. it's been great, man.
It sounded almost like, you know, and I knew I understood exactly how you felt after you'd been off the show for a while. You missed it, and you missed that, you know, being part of the camaraderie and all the attention, and it's such a cool thing to be part of a great show like that. But I got the feeling you almost, there was a little bit of sabotage, like, if I don't get this kind of money, to hell with it because it's killing me back in 2000.
And that's exactly what it was. And when I said, listen, I'd love to take the offer, I think in my heart I knew I had let it go too long. But who knows? You could go back. You could go into your mind and go deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole and never get to the bottom of it. You know, what makes you drink? What makes you horny? What makes you enjoy getting laughs? You know, you could search all day for some of these answers. And I, you know, if they had said, all right, you know, you're back on the show, which had happened three other times, you know, would I have lasted another 5 years? Would I have died in a head-on collision? Would I made it to Sirius? There's no way to know. You know, it's the road not taken. I'll never know. You know, and it's interesting what made Howard decide that he didn't want me there anymore. There is a million, there could be a million different reasons, but it could be as simple as anything, you know. I don't think he wanted to look me in the eye. Because, you know, here he is with this girl that's 20 years younger that, you know, would have spit on him in high school. And, you know, and if he had to say, well, now I'm with a girl that loves me for myself, and then had to turn around and look me in the eye, well, you know, all we have to hear is, you know. and it's all over, you know.
Well, it was kind of odd.
You know what I mean?
You mentioned that Benji Bronk had been brought in the studio, and he was kind of doing what you were doing. And it was like, why do we need him? The show works fine. But he was represented by Don Buchwald, who represented Howard, Robin, and Fred. And you had
that was. Hey, if you get any bright ideas to ask for more money, you just know you should be replaced. You could be replaced, which is so insulting because it wasn't just that I was writing jokes. I mean, I was a piece of a puzzle. But that's what I'm talking about, the Beatles. You know, like, hey, forget it, Ringo. If you don't want to play drums, let's just get another drummer. That's not how it works. You know, but they refuse to look at it like that. So, maybe I'm just classically full of crap because the show is floating along fine. You know, Howard didn't miss a lot of steps. It was worth $1 billion. You know, I wasn't trying to screw up the show or anything. I was just trying to get my due and to be at peace with myself, you know, which I never have been ever.
I know you.
People say, how is your life? And I say, well, I'm miserable half the time and I'm thrilled half the time, which is exactly how I was when I was on the show and I was rich. And it's exactly how it was in the 70s when I had no money. You know, we're getting laid, smoking pot, and having fun. And happy sometimes and miserable sometimes. You know, in the 60s, I'm in college and having the time of my life half the time and miserable half the time. That's just. You know, that's me. That's my life. I got a liberty. You know, good luck.
You you were making close to $600,000 your last year, which is a lot of money in 2000. Although that show was a license to print money, I know they could have paid you more than that, and they offered you more, substantially more. But you had asked for about $1 million a year, which I would have thought they would. Honestly, I would have. Did would you thought they would have paid him that for that show
so.
And all those markets?
I would have thought another.
Years before that, people thought I was making millions. You know, when you know when people found out, you know, people just assumed that, you know, I was making $2 million and I was asking for $3 million. You know, and people yell at me saying, you know, you're so cheap. And I'm like, how can you say I'm cheap? If what I wanted wasn't a lot of money, think about how little money it was to Howard and the show. You know what I mean? I don't even think it was about money. I think it was like a Mexican standoff and. And who knows? You know, I don't know who had his ear or didn't have his ear. But, you know, the one thing that holds firm in my head is it's amazing that it's still as vital a conversation 16 years later as it was the day I left. People are still debating it like Abraham Lincoln and Stephen Douglas. You know, if people are still asking and questioning and yelling at me, you know, people come up and say, hey, Jackie, miss you, man. I'm like, it's been 16 years you missed me. Jesus Christ. I never get sick of hearing it. But it's very flattering, you know. It must have made some kind of imprint somewhere.
It was the first thing I looked up in the book was I wanted to see your side of how it ended. And I was also wondering, because you and Artie are close, what did they pay Artie to take that job? Because Artie had a lot of stuff going on.
You know what? I don't know that. People say, what do you mean you don't know? And I'm like, I don't know. I wouldn't have asked. I wouldn't have known who to ask. And it's none of my business. You know, but Artie's always done really well. And he makes a lot of money. So, you know, who knows? You know. But he's saying, and people say, oh, it's nice to see you and Artie getting along again. I'm like, what planet are you from? He started on the show like 8 months after I left. There was no crossover.
Right.
I've known him forever, and he's been a friend. It had nothing, me leaving the show had nothing to do with him joining the show. You know, it was, it's not like he was sitting there waiting in the wings. You know, that just wasn't the situation.
Well, there
but who knows? You know, it's still interesting. You know,
it is, and you didn't seem to have any regrets. And I got the feeling, if I asked you, do you regret that it all kind of blew up at that point? You would probably say no.
Well, you know what? Yes and no. You know, I mean, like anything, like any decision. You know, like Nancy and I really needed to get divorced. You know, we really did. You know, we were just kind of cohabitating for the last 2 or 3 years. So people say, oh, geez, Nancy left Jackie when he lost his job. Well, the truth of it was that we didn't have time to split up. You know, I was working so hard, the last thing I was going to do was spend my weekend off looking for a bachelor pad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you know, we had to get divorced. But I still regret that sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I nothing but vacillation. You know, so who knows? You know, do I think I think I did what was best, but how do you know? You know, you never know.
Well, you know, you still, how's the book doing, by the way? I assume the book's doing real well.
Well, it's doing good enough that I almost wasn't going to take this phone call. No, it's selling into the dozens.
Oh.
It's, you know, as far as I know, it's doing fine. You know, I don't keep checking up on the numbers because I don't want to know, because I've been promoting like crazy and doing every podcast and all the radio shows and whatever I can do, because I'm not famous enough to get on the big TV shows or anything. But the word of mouth, everybody, they might be bullshitting me, but everybody seems to really be enjoying the book, you know. And if you're a Stone fan or if you're a comedy fan, how could you not enjoy it? It's enjoyable, you know.
No, absolutely. And the Stern part, of course, makes it all the more interesting. People that love the radio show or people that love radio, I'm sure, are fascinated by it. It's called The Joke Man, Bow to Stern by Jackie Martling with foreword by Artie Lang. So there you go. Artie and Jackie don't have a problem, or I don't think Artie would write a foreword. Artie doesn't seem like the kind of guy that holds a lot of grudges anyway.
No. And if you want to get the book, if you go to JackieTheJokeMan.com, that URL takes you right to the Amazon page. JackieTheJokeMan.com. It's a hardcover. It's in Kindle. It's also an audio book, and Artie read the foreword for the audio book. So Artie reads the foreword, and then I read the book. And, you know, it's so funny, because the thought of reading the book for the audio book seemed like, oh, my God, what a horrible thing. I'm telling you, it was the most fun I ever had, sitting there for 2 or 3 days reading my stupid book. The guys were big fans, the producer and the engineer. And it was just a frolic. It was so fun. You know, whoever thought that I'd look forward to going to Newark? But it was great. And I got a joke book coming out. I got to go there and record the joke book. And they were all excited about doing it again. And we're going to go have barbecue. And, you know, I like the idea of creating a party wherever, you know, here, 1,000 years old. I'm still, you know, I still got this party thing following me around on my ass, you know. But who cares?
So how long's the book on audio?
How long is it? You know what? That's a good question.
Because I like, you know, pop it in on the radio, and I'm like, if I take a long ride, what
Naz can't read.
I'm not a big reader.
You know what? I'll send you. I think they sent me a couple free connections, so I'll send you one. I owe that to you guys.
Awesome, thank you.
I have no idea how long it is, but everybody's saying they really enjoy it, because they say they miss me on the radio, and now they got, you know, more of me than they can take. You know,
I have a hard time believing that you don't laugh at stuff in the book too. Do you actually laugh? Because usually people don't laugh.
I really held back my horses as much as I could, but a little sticker goes a long way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And listen, also, I tweet jokes every day at 4:20. I don't know how long I'm going to do it, because they really fucked up everything by making it
longer.
280 characters. I know. Yep. It was so much fun to make jokes fit 140 characters. I've been doing it for years, and it's just such a challenge to make a long joke fit into that little space. And now they took the fun out of it for everybody.
Just keep them short.
Like a quick snippet, you know?
Just keep them short. You don't need to fill it.
Yeah, no, I know, but it's like a vagina, you know. You can't leave true. All that space.
There you go,
Jackie. That's a good note to go out on. The joke man bowed to Stern, and the website, Jackie, to get the book.
It's JackieTheJokeMan.com. Of course, all the information is on my website, Jokeland.com. And I tweet about the book about every 14 seconds. So if you follow me on Twitter, at Jackie Martling, and there's jokes every day at 420 International Marijuana Time. And, of course, 516-922-WINE. Don't ever forget that. And I'm counting on you guys to get me to Detroit.
All right. I'm
counting on you guys.
It's a Rosa challenge.
Rosa Delius is going to call you. She's going to chase you down. Whatever we got to do, I promise you we'll have fun.
We're ready. Jackie, that'd be a blast. I'd love it.
Thanks, Jack.
All right, guys. Listen, I really appreciate the call, and I hope your listeners enjoyed it. And, oh, one last thing. If your listeners had fun, or if they know me from college, or they remember me from Detroit, I answer all my own email, jokeland@AOL.com, jokeland@AOL.com. I get so many emails, people go, yeah, you answer your own email. All right, here I am. Now prove that you answer your own email. And I write back, fuck you, you know? You know, I'm good to them. I love the fans. You know, they've been good to me forever. You know, and I've been giving away free crap. And, you know, I was sending away free stuff forever and ever. And Howard just happened to be one of the people that got some free stuff from me and called me up. You know, it's like luck favoring the prepared. You know, I know you guys are trying to say goodbye, and I'm sitting there drinking coffee and rattling on. I love you, Detroit. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thanks, Jack.
Enjoy the book.
Drew, Matt, Maz, thank you, guys. I appreciate you. And anything I can do for you, I really mean it. Seriously.
Thank you, Jackie. Likewise. Good luck, bud. We'll talk.
All right, guys.
We'll see you soon, bye-bye. Hopefully. Bye-bye.
See ya.